Om Agyanatvananda Sya Giranjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Padati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uttapara Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Sya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Visakhan Zitam Sya Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Dugatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Sudadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakapa Truvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitinanda Shedvaiti Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Process of Creation, Text Number 13. Bhuyo namaksad vrindina chide satam
Bhuyo namaksad vrindina chide satam
Asambhavaya kila Satpamurtaye
Asambhavaya kila Satpamurtaye
Umsampunak paramahansya ashrame
Umsampunak paramahansya ashrame
Yavastitanam anu mrigya dashuse
Yavastitanam anu mrigya dashuse
Uyo namaksad rijina chide satam
Uyo namaksad rijina chide satam
Asambhavaya kila satvamurtaye
Asambhavaya kila satvamurtaye
Umsampunak paramahansa ashrame
Umsampunak paramahansa ashrame
Yavastitanam anamrigya dashushe
Yavastitanam anamrigya dashushe
Bhuyo namasat vrijina chide satam
Bhuyo namasat vrijina chide satam
Asambhavaya kila sattva muktaye
Asambhavaya kila sattva muktaye
Kumsampuna paramahamsya ashrame
Kumsampuna paramahamsya ashrame
Yavastitanam anumrihya dasuse
Yavastitanam anumrihya dasuse
Bhuyo namasad vrijina chide satam
Bhuyo namasad vrijina chide satam
Asambhavaya kila sattva muktaye
Asambhavaya kila sattva muktaye
Umsampuna paramahamsya ashrame
Umsampuna paramahamsya ashrame
Vyavastitanam anumrigya dashushe
Vyavastitanam anumrigya dashushe
ladies.
Bhuyo namasad vrijina chidesatam.
Bhuyo namasad vrijina chidesatam.
Asambhava kilasat. Asambhavaya kilasat vamurtaye.
Asambhavaya kilasat vamurtaye.
Pumsampuna
paramahamsyashrame.
Vyavastitanam anumrigyadashuse.
You can just read the, who's the translator? Do we need a translator? Okay. Bhuyaha.
Bhuyaha.
Again. Namaha.
Namaha.
My obeisances.
Sat.
Of the devotees. For the pious. Vrijina.
Vrijina.
Distresses.
Today.
The liberator.
Asatam.
Of the atheists.
The non-devotee demons.
Asambhavaya.
Cessation of further unhappiness.
Akila.
Complete.
Sattvam. Goodness.
Murtaye.
Unto the personality.
Pumsam.
Of the transcendentalists.
Punaha.
Again.
Paramahamsye.
The highest stage of spiritual perfection.
Ashrame.
In the status.
Vyavastitanam.
Particularly obtained.
The destination.
Dashushe.
One who delivers.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I again offer my respectful obeisances under the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances and atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, He grants their specific destination. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna is the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. Akila means complete, or that which is not kila, inferior. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of nature, prakriti, namely the material nature and the spiritual nature, or the external and internal potencies of the Lord. Material nature is called apara, or inferior, and the spiritual nature is called superior, or transcendental. Therefore, the form of the Lord is neither the inferior material nature. He is also complete transcendence. And He is Murti, or having transcendental form. The less intelligent men, who are unaware of His transcendental form, describe Him as impersonal Brahman. The Brahman is simply the rays of His transcendental body. Yasya Prabha. The devotees who are aware of His transcendental form render Him service. Therefore, the Lord also reciprocates by His causes mercy and thus delivers His devotees from all distresses. The pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas are also dear to Him. Therefore, the pious men of this world are also protected by Him. The impious and the non-devotees are against the principles of the Vedas, and so such persons are always hampered from making advances in their nefarious activities. Some of them who are especially favored by the Lord are killed by him personally, as in the cases of Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and Kamsa. And thus, if demons get salvation, they are thereby checked from further progress in their demoniac activities. Just like a kind father, either in his favor upon the devotees or his punishment of the demons, he is ever kind to everyone, because he is the complete existence for all individual existence. The Paramahamsa stage of existence is the highest professional stage of spiritual values. According to Srimati Kunti Devi, Lord is factually understood by the Paramahamsas only. As there is gradual realization of the transcendence from impersonal Brahman to localized Paramatma to the personality of Godhead, Purushottama, Lord Krishna, similarly there is a gradual promotion of one situation in the spiritual life of sannyas. Kuti Chak, Bahudak, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa are gradual progressive stages in the renounced order of life, sannyas. And Queen Kundi Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, has spoken about them in her prayers for Lord Krishna. Canto 1, Chapter 8. The Paramahamsas are generally found among both the impersonalists and the devotees. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam, as clearly stated by Kunti Devi, pure bhakti yoga is understood by the Paramahamsas. And Kunti Devi has especially mentioned that the Lord descends, paritranaya sarunam, especially toward bhakti yoga to the Paramahamsas. So ultimately the Paramahamsas, in the true sense of the term, are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Sri Jiva Goswami has directly accepted that the highest destination is bhakti yoga, by which one accepts the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Those who accept the path of bhakti yoga are the factual Paramahamsas. Since the Lord is very kind to everyone, the impersonalists who accept bhakti as the means of merging in the existence of the Lord and his impersonal Brahma Jyoti are also awarded their desired destinations. It is assured everyone in the Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Yeyata Mambra Padyante. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, there are two classes of Paramahamsas, namely the Brahmanandis, impersonalists, and the Premanandis, devotees. And both are awarded their desired destinations, although the Premanandis are more fortunate than the Brahmanandis. Both the Brahmanandis and the Premanandis are transcendentalists, and they have nothing to do with the inferior material nature full of existential miseries of life. So the text again. Bhuya namak sadrinjina chide sitam asambhavaya kila satvamortaye pumsam punak paramahamsyad ashrame yav yastitanam anamrigya dasushe. Again, offer my respectful obeisances under the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances and atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destinations. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paska Dhyade Sadharane. Bhagavad Gita gives us the discrimination by which we can see things properly. generally due to our emotional attachment to ideas. Therefore, we don't see things properly. Ideas or knowledge and emotion don't always go together. They're supposed to go together, but that's only when we see when emotions are in line with knowledge, and knowledge is in line with spiritual values. So here it mentions that two classes of persons are in harmony with Krishna and Krishna's desires. Those who are devotees, or even aspiring devotees, and those who are following the Vedas. There are different types of swadharmas. Swadharma means one's occupation. Swa means own, and dharma means occupation. Our actual occupation is Jivara Svapahoy Krishnara Niti Das. We're supposed to be servants of Krishna. And Krishna, he's a person, and therefore he has ideas. And his idea, generally speaking, is that he wants everyone to engage in loving relationships with him and in service to him with each other. Now, in the material world, we've come here to compete against each other, to become God. That's not very loving. But in the midst of our competition, we pretend that we're loving and to take advantage of each other. That I'll chew on you and I'll allow you to chew on me. Because I'm going to chew on you a little bit more than you chew on me. That way, there's some profit on my part. So therefore, it's worthwhile to make a deal with you. As long as I chew on you more than you chew on me. But we'll call it love, because otherwise we'd be disappointed. It wouldn't be so romantic, our chewing on each other. And then we have children, and then we chew on them. And we continuously, hopefully, we hope to keep on chewing on them until we leave our body. But it's all love. So with such a mentality, it's very hard. So the Vedas, to actually develop any higher consciousness. Therefore the Vedas, they regulate how much we chew. So we don't eat too much. We have to eat a little bit because we're in the material world in order to survive. There has to be some eating. But we shouldn't eat too much. We shouldn't try and chew on too many people, especially at the same time. And that's called progress. Krishna, he gives the regulations of the Vedas, or as Prabhupada explains in the first canto, second verse, dharma prayogita kaitavotra nirmana tatam nira. That the Srimad Bhagavatam, it kicks out all kinds of cheating processes. Dharma prayojita kaitava, cheating processes. In other words, it explains and it reveals things as they actually are. The Bhagavatam is not very diplomatic. It's not very romantic. Although we find romance in the Bhagavatam, we have persons like King Prachinibhaisha. Not Paranjana. The one who married Urvashi. Yeah. Purava. We have this romance between Urvashi, who actually came from Lord Vishnu. Lord Narayan was manifested the most beautiful lady, heavenly prostitute, Urvashi, and a very romantic encounter with Purarava. But at the end, it's not very romantic. It's kind of... she gives him up practically for no reason. Quite whimsical. The Gandharvas, they just arrange it that they steal her two sheep. And he goes, and then because she's henpecking him, he goes running after them. And then when they made a deal that they wouldn't see each other naked, except if they were having sexual intercourse, and then she sees him naked and she leaves. She tells him to get the sheep. He does what she says, and then he gets the reaction for it. She blames him. And that's not even the end of the romance. Imagine, he's still attached to her. He winds up spending the rest of his time trying to get back to her so he can get beaten by her again. So this is the Purarava. He's a very elevated person. This is even the junction between Treta Yuga and Satya Yuga. And he just looks like a fool. Although he's such an elevated personality, just running after some lady who's as attached to him, you know, as the, we could say the lotus, the drop of water is attached to a lotus leaf. It's love, it's love, it's love. And when you don't do exactly what I desire, then it's not love anymore. In any case, the Vedic literature is meant to regulate these things so that we can eventually understand what it actually is. The neophyte devotee, he actually has faith in material energy, although he claims he loves Krishna. But actually he has a lot of more faith usually in the material energy than he has in Krishna. It's the same thing with I love you or I love you. And if things don't go well, I don't love you anymore. The same thing for Krishna. But one has to try to perform sadhana. One has to have the intelligence that we're in a very precarious situation. I'm not exactly free from illusory energy. There's a lot of living entities who thought they were free from the illusory energy. We're crawling in our rooms as cockroaches right now. They were wrong. And it was a big mistake. It was the biggest mistake they could possibly make. Therefore, one has to perform sadhana because otherwise there's no means of developing our spiritual intelligence. And while we're performing sadhana at the same time, we should cultivate knowledge. Spiritual knowledge means that we should also try to understand what my attachments are. And our attachments may be in many different places. They may not only be out of love for Krishna. Matter of fact, I'm sure they're not just pure love of Krishna. Otherwise, we'd be Paramahansas and Krishna would have already revealed himself to us. And therefore, Krishna explains, in general, that generally the neophyte devotee is in distress. And then Prabhupada says that generally people, they come because they want some economic development. So that's the main distress in the current society. Actually, the main distress is the inability to follow the regular principles. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meeting, they cause the stress physically and mentally. And as soon as one gives them up, one is still in distress, but one is less distress. So in the beginning, one thinks he's liberated. Just because he's following the 4-week principles for a week, thinks he's become liberated. And then gradually he becomes more conscious, then he becomes aware that he's not liberated. And he thinks the process didn't work. I spent at least 3 months on the process. I'm still not completely liberated. Something's wrong with the process. One never thinks it could be something wrong with me because that's not possible. So one becomes aware of the fact that I haven't really given up the 4-week principles, I'm just trying to get free from their distresses, that's all. I'm waiting the time when the distresses go away so I can resume them. Because it's love. And then after, so Prabhupada said, generally the neophyte, he comes with some hidden desire, and then after it's fulfilled, then they go away. They think Krishna is very good, thank you very much, you did a great job. I appreciate it, I'll be back next Jamasa. Or the one after that, if I'm, my schedule is too busy. Or if I'm in distress again, I have your email address and I'll consult with you. So that may go on for some time until one realizes that I have to actually mentally give these things up because they're also causing me distress. And then we make some progress and then one is still bored with the process. So then one hears about how if you become a little more elevated, then you can learn how to become more comfortable in the material world. Once you get free from your distress, now you can increase your comfort. Then generally the devotee becomes interested in health, and especially health, then health. What we rejected as neophytes, I don't really care about my body, I'm transcendental. Then suddenly it becomes a whole preoccupation, transcendental health. Herbs, what herbs are good for me, and good skin and good digestion. And so one becomes fresh air, what my mental state is and my relationships with others, and then devotee care kicks in, and Krishna care is not so important, devotee care is important. Of course devotee care is important, but it's important in context of other things also. So that's the second stage. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that generally speaking, the artist, the distressed devotee, he's on the level of a Shudra. And those who are below, though, there's in the lower species of life. They're not really human beings. Human beings begin at, the attempt to become a human being begins when we become a Shudra. When we're trying to get free from our distress. Prabhupada said, for instance, in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, that unless we're inquiring why I'm suffering, we're not even a human being. At least we're not even trying to become a human being. In another place, Prabhupada writes that only a Brahmin is actually a human being. Even the Kshatriyas, they're not actually human beings, because a human being is a gentleman or a lady. But a Kshatriya, you know, they're actually, anyone who's interested in sense gratification, they can't actually be really classified as a human being, because for their sense gratification, they'll do anything, practically speaking, if they become attached to it. Therefore, Chanaka Pandit says, don't trust a politician or a lady. So he's not really criticizing the ladies. He's criticizing the whimsical nature that sometimes manifests when ladies become attached to their emotional natures. But then in this age, Kali Yuga, men are practically like ladies also. They're just as attached to their emotional, their minds as the ladies are, and sometimes even more. So therefore they usually ask them to do something, they say yes, 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 and because they didn't even bother writing it down, they can't even remember what they agreed to do, nor do they care. Yeah. I forgot about it. It doesn't make any difference. If it was really important, I would have remembered it. Therefore, how can you trust someone if they agree to do something, they don't do it? And why don't they do it? Because usually they don't remember it, and they didn't think it was important enough to write it down. And even if they wrote it down, they don't even think it's important enough to look at what they wrote down. So they'll do it. And if they look at it, if they don't want to do it, they don't do it anyhow. And if they do it, they do it in a grudging mood. So it's better off, they probably would have been better off if they didn't do it. So you can't trust someone who's on the mental platform. because they won't really do it. Or if they do it, they'll do it in such ways it would have been better off if they didn't do it. And the politicians, they have a license to say yes, yes, yes when they're meaning no, no, no. So if they say yes, you wonder if they really meant no. If they say no, it may have been no, it may have been yes, it may have been who knows what it meant. So you can't trust people on the mental platform. So the Shudras, they're on the mental platform, but there's enough fear that they're afraid to do the wrong thing, because there's actually people who will chastise them if they do the wrong thing. What keeps them in line? The animals, you hit them with a stick, they just growl. Or they run away. But they never understand why they're being hit with a stick. So people who are less than Shudras, they don't know why they're being hit with a stick. They just either growl or attack the stick wielder, or they run away. But there's no learning, because they have no higher intelligence. So when we come to the platform of inquiring why I'm suffering, then people can tell us why we're suffering. And if we agree at least to refrain from those activities which cause our suffering, then we make a little progress. Then we actually begin to acquire human characteristics by which we can actually acquire knowledge. Just like we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and we hear the same thing all the time, that we're not the body. But just, usually it's just as unclear from the beginning to the end of the class about our being the body. Matter of fact, we take it as such a simple affirmation, we don't even take it seriously. It's because we're so clouded by material energy that we don't even take it seriously. We're too worried about what time prasadam is going to be and other things to actually hear it pretty and see what the implications are of the most basic things of our philosophy. But then, after we try to become a little comfortable, after our consciousness clears a little bit and we're a little less in anxiety, then we come to the Vaishya platform. The Vaishyas are still pretty quite bewildered by the illusory energy, but at least they have some idea of how to live in the material energy in such a way that they can make some progress. Their minds aren't completely absorbed in the illusion. They're mostly absorbed in illusion. And then we become eventually jignasu, actually inquisitive. What is actually in this book? What is it actually saying? I've been reading it for 25 years and I never really thought very carefully about what it really said. I didn't really care because it had nothing to do with my existence. It seemed like more like a fairy tale than a reality. So then one actually tries to develop some vision. It doesn't mean that by vision, seeing through spiritual eyes, that means that we're actually experiencing reality. We're just understanding that we're an illusion and that we need glasses to see things better, and the glasses are the spiritual knowledge. So that's the platform of a person who's mostly in passion, partly in goodness. He knows he needs glasses to see, that's his knowledge, but he can't really see because he's in passion. He wants to control the material nature so he suffers less and enjoys more. But he knows he has to get the knowledge from persons who have knowledge in order to do that. So he's submissive at least to the Brahman, to persons who have knowledge, who have some realization, at least more than he has. So that's jignasu. He'll actually hear what's being said. So for that, for us, this means that during the class, we're actually going to listen to what's being said. And I think, well, I heard this so many times before. I already know before they say anything, before the class begins. They're going to tell me the same thing every time. You're not your body. Krishna's God. I could have played the class yesterday. It would have been the same thing. But then one actually becomes jignasu. One actually sees that there is something more subtle to what's being said than I'm actually able to perceive due to my conditioned existence. There's actually there's some logic and reason to the madness that seems to go on in the Hare Krishna movement's classes that we did. And then finally, when one actually gets transcendental vision, one realizes that I'm actually suffering in the material world. That everything I'm doing is just either to get out of suffering that I'm in, or to avoid more, or to get out of the suffering that I'm in. But it's all suffering, it's all negative. We may call it love, we may call it progress, we may call it whatever we want, but it's either it's an attempt to get out of suffering, which ends in death, or to make some, or to get out of our present suffering, or to avoid the future suffering, which is death. And everyone loses. There's no material remedy for any of these things. So one realizes that, and then he wants to become a Brahmanandi. He wants to realize Brahma. So, not Mayavadi. Mayavadi, they don't accept anything that Krishna says. That's why they're always in Maya. But Brahmanandis, they accept the Vedas, they accept Krishna's directions, but their aim is ultimately just self. There's no devotion. They're just using Krishna to help them get up to liberation. So that may be our position to some extent also, although we're trying to become devotees, and therefore we're developing some appreciation for Krishna. But ultimately we're hoping Krishna to help us get free from our artha, our distress, or to find some our present distress, or to free us from our past ignorance so we find more comfort in the material energy, or to become jignasu and actually clear away our problems of material existence and actually get real bliss in the heavenly planets. And then ultimately avoid old age, disease, and death. To get to the real source, the real problems that we're facing. But we're trying to shield by, you know, marriage and family life and making money, economic development or something. In this Kali Yuga, there is no Dharma and there's no liberation. Is only economic development for sense gratification. So people actually believe that by getting money, they'll solve all their problems. They'll be able to endlessly and incessantly gratify their senses. So they're animals, according to Srila Rishabdi. Nanyan deho deha bhajam riloke kastan karman harate vidbhujamya. They're just interested in eating. Like the hogs and dogs who eat stool, they actually have 100% faith in sense gratification and economic development. They think the people who have billions of dollars are actually enjoying. They have more stool to eat than anyone else. Therefore, they're the most fortunate. So, Dharma, religious life, ultimately ends up in regulating our economic development and our sense gratification to the point that we actually become liberated. And from there, actual devotional service begins. Then we actually perform our service with some devotion for Krishna, which is normal and natural because when we actually become conscious of Krishna and conscious of even Krishna's mood and all his residents, we become affected by their association because it's 100% devotional. And gradually our devotion arises too. It may partially arise even in our neophyte stage, but it only becomes most apparent when we actually become liberated from our material conceptions and we become detached from our material desires. So that's part, that Bodha, Kuticha, Bodha, Paravijakacharya, and Paramahamsa. So these are, this is ultimately what we're aiming at. It doesn't matter officially or unofficially. So the beginning is Swadhyaya. Hearing about the philosophy. Hearing about our actual nature and self, so we become convinced that I'm not crazy if I take up the process of Krishna consciousness. It's a fact that I'm crazy, and even if I take up the process of Krishna consciousness, I'm still crazy. but I'm not crazy because I'm taking up the process of Krishna consciousness. I'm crazy because I'm under the influence of the illusory energy. And therefore, if I take it up, swadhyaya, I'm here, then I have to perform charity, I have to perform sense and mind control, I have to perform sacrifice, etc. If I want to get out of my perverted nature, my perverted mentality, by being controlled by my mind and senses, and therefore doing everything simply to satisfy my perverted consciousness, which will never benefit me. Therefore, household life, the second stage, is meant to practice those things. Sense and mind control. But we do that by utilizing our assets in Krishna service. So even the householders, when they become a householder, they're supposed to actually accept the fact that their house belongs to Krishna, the wife or the husband belongs to Krishna, their children belong to Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna. And if they send their children to Gurukul, or they educate their children in Krishna consciousness somehow or another, that's an affirmation that they're accepting that their child belongs to Krishna. And they think, oh, this is too hard, you know, no one wants to educate their child in Krishna consciousness, and we have such nice karmi schools. Besides that, the children should first learn how to become demons, and then they can make a choice whether they become a devotee or not later on. It's like the non-devotees never say, oh, let's send our children to a gurukul, get them trained up as a nice devotee, and then later on, if they want to become a demon, they can do that. But we say, no, let them become a demon first, get trained up, and then later on, if they want to become a devotee, they can make that choice. So that means that to accept that everything I have in my house belongs to Krishna, including myself, then I can utilize things in Krishna's service. And then sacrifice can be there for Krishna. Jagna by Vishnu. Jagnai Sankirtana Prayara Yanti Yusamedasa. Then the household, they're chanting Hare Krishna in the house. It's not like some, you know, we don't have time to chant Hare Krishna. We don't have time to hear about Krishna. We have more important things to do. When we make our first $1,000,000, then we'll have time to hear about Krishna. And of course, we took a vow of 4 Eightful Principles, but that's for the brahmacharis, because they're not so advanced. We follow three of the regular principles: no meat, no fish, no eggs. That's our sacrifice. That's our sense and mind control. And in charity, yes, we throw in a euro and a half every Jamastami. We expect, 300 million percent in return from Krishna. No, one follows the 4 Eightful Principles, chants Hare Krishna, begins to develop spiritual vision that my house, my wife, Manasadeha, Geho, Yogi, Shimara, everything is meant for Krishna, then we can actually practice tapasya. Then we can actually restrain our senses. When my mind wanders, when I get different ideas, then we can actually nip them and actually go through the austerity of becoming actually conscious of Krishna. Tapasya brahmacharyena samena cha devena cha. Our process is supposed to begin at tapasya. That we're willing to look for the restrain from, instead of shreyas, there's shreyas and prayas. So shreyas is the immediate, isn't it?
Yes.
Prayas is immediate. Prayas. Instead of the immediate gratification, we look for the shreyas so that we can perform tapasya. Krishna, when he's talking about the different types of happiness, he says that Yattaradre Vishamiva. No, Yattaradre Vishamiva Parinami Vitopama. Tatsukam Satikam Prota Atmabuddhi Prasadaja. That which in the beginning is bitter like poison, and at the end is like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So that means we have to get off the mental platform. And that takes a lot of practice. Without austerity, without sense and mind control, without charity, without performing the Sankirtan Jaga and spreading the Sankirtan movement, we can't learn the Pasi. And without the Pasi, we can't get off the mental platform. We can't serve Krishna sometimes, and when I like, I serve my mind and expect some progress. You know, yes, I'll surrender to Krishna, except I have these, you know, 300,000 things that I just set aside as special. And Krishna better not touch them, or else I give up his service. And I haven't officially made up the list, but I know Krishna is in my heart, and he knows. So he better be careful. I have a very short fuse. Step over the line and I'm out. No, we're willing to perform tapasya, and then fearlessness will come. We'll actually begin to become purified of our material desires, and we'll actually gain transcendental awareness. And that means we're beginning the process of actually devotional service, which will progress. Here it says different stages of sannyas, but ultimately goes from nishta to ruchi, to asakti, to bhava, to prema, etc. And then real life begins again. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
How to deal with the constant chatter of the mind when we are doing japa?
You don't deal with it. If you deal with it, you won't be doing japa. If you want to deal with your mind, see a psychiatrist. If you want to chant japa, listen to the Hare Krishna mantra. And if you start chanting Hare Krishna and stop dealing with your mind will go away. So if you want to deal with your mind, don't chant japa. Deal with your mind. Because it's going to go away if you chant Hare Krishna. Yes. And just one other thing. There may be some things in our mind reminding us of something we're supposed to do. You know, like for instance, I forgot to turn the stove off, and the water and the milk is probably boiling over right now. And we think, well, I still have a few rounds left. So we should probably, in that case, we should probably stop our japa and take it as intelligence that I should turn the milk on. Or that, you know, next week the rent is due and the landlord said he's going to kick all the devotees out of the building unless I pay the rent. But it's too important to chant my japa to remember that. So we should probably write it down. So there's some things that are probably have some significance that we should probably take as a duty and write down so we can go on chanting our japa. But we don't really have, it's not an emergency. Therefore, probably Krishna says, karma yeva adhikara ste, ma paleshu kadachana, ma karmapala hetur bor ma tastenga sukarmani. That you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the action or not be attached to not doing your duty. So it's not like, well, as soon as we start chanting Hare Krishna, all our duties go away. So the stupid mind keeps on reminding me to turn off the milk. I'm transcendental to all of it. No, we have emergency duties, Prabhupada says. We have prescribed duties and desired activities. So we may have a piece of paper or something like that and write down things that come to our mind and do them accordingly if it's necessary. But we shouldn't just... Usually most things that come to our mind during japa are useless. So we can just forget them. but other things may have some value. We write them down one time, and then after we're done, we organize our life, then we won't be disturbed by them. Yes.
How much should we struggle to do material things in high quality?
Material things, are not, we shouldn't do anything material. We'll just speak of high quality. Everything should be done spiritually to please Krishna. And if it's done to please Krishna, if it's given to us by Krishna and his representatives to do, by Guru Sadhana Shastra, then we should do it with very carefully and attentively. Because it's being done for Krishna. And if it's not, if it's not authorized by Krishna or his representatives, and if it's being done for our sense gratification, we shouldn't do it. Because if we do it very nicely, it'll degrade us even more than if we did it poorly. Because if we do it nicely, we'll enjoy, and then we'll get more attached to the enjoyment. Better do things sloppily and suffer, therefore we won't be so attached. Anything else? Yes.
May I please ask, how can we develop that strength of actually doing what we are saying or promising?
Well, for one thing, we can write things down, because this is the age of forgetfulness. We're just looking around at all the objects of the senses all the time, and Maya is taking away our intelligence and our remembrance. So we write things down and then organize our life on the basis of what our duties are. Then we'll get a little inspiration to actually become organized, do things systematically. And eventually we'll be able to cultivate knowledge systematically also and gain some of it. But if we can't remember anything, we don't really do our duties. If there's no duty, there won't be any sense in mind control. If there's no sense in mind control, there's no spiritual advancement. There's no advancement of spirit. There's no liberation. If there's no liberation, there's no devotion. So a little devotion is there. We just start writing things down. Start organizing what our duties are. Not only, things that are necessary for our basic survival, but also for our spiritual advancement. Then if we have a balance like that, then life won't be so whimsical. My mind tells me to go here, I go there, and then my mind tells me to go there, and goes there. I just do whatever my mind likes. We'll be doing things with intelligence. And part of it, the mind will actually feel satisfied after some time. It's not that the mind keeps on bothering me. You don't love me anymore, or you've abandoned me. No, actually the mind will actually become satisfied. Eventually it'll congratulate. You did the best thing, I was just crazy, sorry. Good thing you didn't listen to me. We both would have suffered. All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam.